Hello, friends. This is Greg Kokol. The show is Stand to Reason, and I'm always happy that you are part of what we do here. I have mentioned this many times before, but I'm just going to say it again. My heart as a Christian is for you. It isn't for the non-Christian. I mean, I want the kingdom to be extended in their lives, but principally my heart is for helping you to grow as an ambassador for Christ, and then you all as disciples for Christ to go out and have a powerful impact for Christ as you take some of the things that maybe you learned from me or one of our other people on the team and be strengthened to be able to make a difference in the lives of others. So that is my heartbeat, just so you know, if you hadn't heard me talk about that before. And kind of in light of that, this month, we are reprising our campaign of the last 2 years in August that we call Be One of the 100. Because what we're doing is we're inviting members of our STR community to be one of 100 new strategic partners with STR. Now, strategic partners is a very important group. It's really our financial bedrock. It's a very special group of people who have said, we're on board with you. We believe in what you're doing. You've helped us in our lives. We want to help you help others in the way that I just described. And we want to commit ourselves to a certain amount every month. So we're going to financially support you for a certain amount. And in light of that, this week and next week, I've invited in each week one of our wonderful strategic partners to chat with me. And right now on the line, I have with me our friend Stacy Alderfer. And Stacy, first, thanks for taking some time to chat with me a little on the air about being a strategic partner.
Oh, thank you, Greg. I'm so delighted to chat with you.
The last time we talked, if I recall, was about, I want to say about a year and a half ago, but maybe it was 2.5 years ago. It's probably before COVID, where we I met with you and your husband on a hilltop somewhere outside of Seattle, and you took me to this magnificent place for lunch with the beautiful panoramic. I still have the photograph of that.
Oh, it was one of the rare sunny Seattle days that you happened to catch when you were in town.
Yeah, it was great. It was sweet being with you and with your husband. And, of course, our relationship with you goes back a ways. And yes. I thought maybe it would be helpful if you told us first just a little bit about how you first discovered Stand to Reason and the role that STR has played in your life over the years.
Yeah, I would love to. You know, to be honest, it was a little hard thinking back what brought me to Stand to Reason in the first place, because mm-hmm. it was so very many years ago. But I think it was at around the same time I used to work in radio broadcasting and do a lot of research, and some tough questions would come up from different people in the station and different friends. And I had really wanted to find a good resource for those tough questions that I did not have the answer to. And I don't remember how I came across you and Stand to Reason. But once I did, you were kind of my go-to resource
for
tough questions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. God knows. He knows how that happened. I'm always curious. When I talk to people who have been around for a long time, I'm just curious to find out if they recall. Now, you're right. You've been around for so long. It's hard to remember way back then what the details were. But the important thing is that that you were able to find us and that we were able to serve your needs in mm-hmm. a significant way. I think we've even had some private conversations about adoption and stuff like that. I mean, way back
exactly.
when.
It was our oldest kids are almost 13, so it was even prior to that, and it was extremely helpful. I remember having some conversations with you and Melinda Penner about fertility and different things, that the issues that come up in life, and you guys were a tremendous resource to us personally, and we just were so blessed that you took the time to help us think through some really difficult situations.
Well, that's why we're here, and we were really glad to give the advice that we had, such as it was, and it apparently bore fruit in your life, because now you have mm-hmm. how many children?
We have four daughters now.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. Be fruitful and multiply one way or another. That a girl. Okay, well, I'm glad.
Yeah.
Well, that's really, that means first of all, you've got your hands full. And how old is the eldest? Did you say 13?
Yes, our twins are nearly 13, and our youngest is 4. And then we also have a 7-year-old.
Oh, all girls.
Mm-hmm. Your husband.
Yes, he's in for trouble. I'm just saying. I'm speaking from experience here.
Yes, yes.
I remember when we had our daughters, who are now 16 and 13, people said, I was glad to have daughters because it brings out a softer side of me when they're younger. But they told me, said, the daughters are easier when they're younger. But when they hit the teen years, look out. That's when they get really hard. Boys, they're tougher when they're younger, but after a little while, it's just kind of smooth sailing. It's a lot easier. So I am in the midst of that period of time that it's more challenging. So I'm sympathetic.
Well, we'll have 4 teenage daughters at once in our house. So
man.
We may be making some more calls to you, Greg, at that point in our life.
Hey, but the advantage is the eldest can now babysit the youngest.
Yes.
See, because she's moving into that age where she can start taking over and you and dad can get out more often, something like that.
So
at some point, though, in your relationship with Stand to Reason, you decided to become a strategic partner. You decided to make a commitment every month to send a gift to Stand to Reason and be part of that financial foundation for us at STR. Do you remember how long ago that was? Just curious.
You know, I believe it's been maybe a couple of years now. I can't quite remember.
Mm-hmm.
At least a year, but maybe coming up on 2 here.
Okay, so tell me, and really for our listeners, because what my point here is to encourage people to consider being part of that team, just like you did. What was the motivating factor for you to become one of the cadre of the strategic partner group?
Well, there were really 2 reasons. One is we could not possibly believe more in the mission of Stand to Reason, and just over the last few years, especially seeing how vital of a role Stand to Reason has played in encouraging and strengthening the church and classical Christianity, as you like to put it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are lay people. We're not in ministry, and we want to support your work as much as possible and support you and all of our friends at Stand to Reason. So for us, it was first and foremost a matter of just really believing and wanting to partner with you in what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
The second reason is purely because I would forget to donate on a monthly basis, and I thought if I do it automatically, I won't have to remember every month.
Well, that's a perk, we think, make it easy, you know, and make it EFT or something, and it's all automatic, and you don't have to. I do that with a lot of my giving and certainly with a lot of my regular bills, just so I don't have that to worry about. But, you know, it occurred to me last time we met, there was no, when we had that wonderful luncheon together, there was no reality in Seattle. And now you've got kids that are moving into reality age. Does that resonate with you at all in terms of your relationship with Stand to Reason?
Absolutely. In fact, I think our daughters are a little bit on the young end for that this year, but in fact, my mother-in-law is going to be going. She's very excited about it. That's right where we're at. We homeschool our kids, and we're in the front lines of their education and spiritual formation. And so the resources that Stand to Reason has with Alan Schliemann and Tim Barnett, especially, and now John Noyes, I've really enjoyed hearing on the air. We are very excited to be a part of that in the coming years.
Okay, so one last question here, Stacey,
and
that is, I know that there are people that are listening that are thinking, maybe I should do this, maybe not, I don't know. I'm on the fence in terms of making a commitment to this organization financially. What would you say to them if they came to you and were just asking, you know, about that issue?
That's a good question, Greg. You know, I would probably just appeal to them on the basis of saying that we live in very challenging times and complex issues that we deal with as Christians we need a good resource to go to. We can't possibly be at the front of the knowledge base on every issue that we have that is going to come across our path. Mm-hmm. And just knowing that you at Stand to Reason are doing the work on the front line, so to speak, of the cultural battle, mm-hmm. that provides a great resource in a winsome and loving way for us to take advantage of. We need that, and we're going to need that more and more. And I just feel like, even if it's a small amount, to feel like we're a part in providing that for strengthening of the body and for strengthening of our ministry and personal ministry, is just, I don't know if you can put a value on that, mm-hmm. But I would highly, highly encourage people to even start very small and work up if you can, but just mm-hmm. to be a consistent support for a very, very needed and fruitful ministry. Well, that's what I would say.
Yeah, thank you for that. It makes me think about the commitments I have to other organizations and helping them. And mm-hmm. I actually feel like I am taking part in their enterprise, their work.
Absolutely.
When I send a check, because it is a very tangible way of allowing them to do the things that they do. And I mm-hmm. we have overseas organizations that people are missionaries and they're making a difference. I'm thinking right now of a young lady who we support who's working in Cambodia. And I, mm-hmm. you know, I worked with Cambodian refugees 40 years ago. It's mm-hmm. close to my heart. But now that missionaries can actually get into that country, I feel like the work she's doing that I'm helping her, mm-hmm. help her with through support is the work that I'm doing too. It's a way that... I can do something
so
there
true.
that even though I can't go to the country, so to speak.
Well, and I feel the same way, you know, with having kids and a very busy life. We don't have a lot of outreach opportunity, but it just warms my heart every time I listen to the podcast and I hear you engage with people. I feel exactly the same way. Mm. And it just, yeah, it's a wonderful thing to be a part of in some small way. And also, I would say that Stand to Reason has been a completely trustworthy organization over the years. Mm-hmm. We've known you for so long, and, mm-hmm. and there's never been one instance where I've had a question of integrity or anything to that measure. In fact, completely the opposite. So we're very, very happy to be a part of the Stand to Reason family in that way.
Well, Stacy, we're happy to have you, not only as strategic partners, but as friends. So thanks so
Thank
much.
Thank you, and, likewise.
And maybe we'll see you, or at least your mother-in-law, in what is it, coming
October,
up in October, October 15th mm-hmm. and 16th, yeah.
Yes.
So thanks so much again, and also thank you for spending some time with me away from your four kids, so you can talk with me about this.
It's my pleasure, Greg, okay. and God bless you.
Yeah, thank you, and our best to your husband as well.
Thank you so much.
Okay, bye, Stace.
Bye-bye.
Stacy Aldefer, a valued and treasured strategic partner, someone we know personally. We don't get to know all our strategic partners personally, but we do have a personal, deep, profound gratitude, and this is to them. And this is why I want to encourage you to be one of the 100 this month. That's our goal. And last two summers, we had the same goal. We are going to kind of reward you, thank you, in a particular way if you sign up. And basically, what we're going to do for a commitment of $25 a month or more, we are going to send you a copy of last year's Reality Conference. That's 2020 Reality. The theme then was Truth is Not Ice Cream. We're going to send you a DVD set and a digital download. You can keep it for yourself. You can give it to a young person. You can give it to your youth pastor or to your pastor. You can do whatever you want to leverage that gift that we're sending to you. And that includes 9 in-depth teaching sessions with J. Warner Wallace and Elisa Childers and Sean McDowell and Bobby Conway and Alan Schliemann and Elisa Childers. I have one of those sessions. Actually, Jim's there twice. So is Elisa. So you're going to get a great resource as our way of saying thank you for being part of this campaign to gain 100 more strategic partners. The website you can go to, str.org/partner, str.org/partner. Just follow the prompts, and then we'll make sure that we send the DVD and the digital download to you of 2020's Reality Conference, Truth is Not Ice Cream. Once again, str.org/partner. All right. Let's take a break, and we'll be back for more here on Stand to Reason. Friends, if you like this broadcast, I know you'll love #STRAsk. It's our shorter 20-minute podcast where I am paired with the wonderful Amy Hall, and together we answer the questions you send us on Twitter. #STRAsk is released twice a week, Mondays and Thursdays, and it's only about 20 minutes long, so it's perfect to listen to on your morning jog or while driving around running errands or cleaning your garage or just plain loafing at home. Amy and I tackle your questions on theology and ethics and culture and lots more, offering our insight on the questions you're asking or the challenges you face. You can listen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you download your own shows. Just remember, send us your questions on Twitter using the name of the podcast, #STRAsk. That's #STRAsk.
You can take Stand to Reason with you through our mobile apps, available for free from the App Store or the Google Play Store. The Quick Reference app gives you short, easily accessible courses on our most popular topics like tactics, homosexuality in the Bible, morality, the story of reality, and many more. The Stand to Reason app has all our latest content available at your fingertips. You can listen to our podcasts, check the blog, and access timely and practical resources. They're free, so download the apps today on the App Store or the Google Play Store and start carrying Stand to Reason with you everywhere you go. If you enjoy our apps, you can help other people find them by rating them on the App Store or the Google Play Store.
Hi, Greg Kokel here, back with you on Stand to Reason. And I, lately, it seems, I have had a hard time controlling my temper about certain things. That is, things that I see in our communities, in our culture, in our nation that are so wrong, that are so unjust or unjust. And that I almost can't contain myself. I want to scream. I want to tear my hair out. And we were talking last show with Monique Dusson, who's going to be talking about CRT. And I look at all of these demonstrations related to this issue and all of the property that's been destroyed and all the anger that's been expressed, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm not suggesting it's all utterly misplaced. That's not my point, because there are problems, but there is so much more injustice in this country that needs attention that is completely ignored. So there is like politically correct injustice that gets the attention, but there's all kinds of other injustice that doesn't. And the question we had last hour on abortion, and it's come up in the past. Last week we had something like this. Well, if you're really against abortion, you ought to be concerned about these other issues too. Well, we are concerned about these other issues, and we are in different capacities. We speak to these as a body. We speak to these, even if individuals can't speak to everything, and it's part of the response. But I'm concerned, though, that when it comes to the secular culture and what they're complaining about injustice, they tend to be locked into a groove, and they can't see outside of the groove. All right, and I have two articles in front of me here, and it has to do with something that happened a few months ago. And I frankly, this is one of those cases where I just want to read most of the article because it's trying to sum it up will not do it justice, and it's well written. But it might make you as angry as it makes me. And it has to do with abortion, and more specifically with the grotesque injustice that is involved when a person who does not think abortion is right, but is actually what it is, taking the life of another human being. That, by the way, is a medical fact. That's science. That's not ethics. That's not religion. That is science. A separate, unique, individual human being is killed in every abortion, and that is the point of the abortion, to kill the growing human being inside mom. Now, whether or not that's justified, people have different opinions about, but the point I'm making is that's the fact of the matter. And some people believe that not only should it not be done, but that they should not be forced to participate in it. And what could be more obvious than that as a legitimate liberty? Forget about your religious issues. Religion doesn't have to be a justification for opting out of an abortion. If you think that abortion kills another human being, then you should be allowed to opt out, especially if you can make the case that scientifically that's what's going on. Okay? In fact, by the way, the law, generally speaking, does not allow you to kill another human being even under the threat of lethal force. If you are being forced by somebody else to commit another crime and they are at gunpoint, you are exonerated for committing the crime under those circumstances unless it's taking another life. And you cannot be exonerated even though you're under lethal threat. You can't take that other life in that circumstance. But in this case, that's exactly what's happening. Abortion takes the life of an innocent human being, and not only are you not, well, as I'll show you, you're not necessarily free to opt out. You can be forced to do it, forced by the government or by your, let me back up. You can be forced by your employer to do it, and the government won't protect you. Now, many of you are thinking, wait a minute, I thought we already covered this ground. I thought the Congress unanimously passed a law that said if you have religious scruples about abortion, you cannot be forced to participate. And the answer to that is you're right. But just because a law is passed does not mean that a given administration is going to enforce it or respect it and respect your rights under that law. Which means then when that's not done, especially in a morally weighty issue right like this, it's not like a cop, you know, you're breaking the law, you're speeding, and the cop says, I'll let you off with a warning. Well, strictly speaking, he's not enforcing that law. But that's not like this. This is something different. This has to do with a basic human liberty, irrespective of your religious convictions. Yet when the law does not honor that, or let's say the law, the executives who have a responsibility to adjudicate the laws passed to protect your basic human rights, when they don't enforce that law, we got a real problem, because that means the rule of law is not the rule in a country. That means that under certain circumstances, whoever is in power, who has the responsibility to enforce things, can just say, we don't care what the law says. It doesn't matter to us. Why? We have the power to do what we want. Now, I don't care what political party you're part of, what your political philosophy happens to be. That kind of thing is something that ought to be opposed by everybody. Because right now it's a Christian's ox that's being gored, but the same principle can be applied by others. Where truth doesn't matter, power is all that matters. And what I've written in Solid Ground, this would be the March, the March issue, the primal heresy, and I developed the ideas a little bit further in subsequent issues, that one of two fundamental forces are going to rule, either the force of truth or the force of power. If truth doesn't dictate how we live and how law is passed and enforced, then it's just going to be power. It's just going to be a raw exercise of power. And this is where it becomes appropriate to properly speak truth to the powers who ignore truth and ignore justice. I know that broader principle is a big deal right now in secular culture, but it is very narrowly applied in my view. And so I'm going to read this article by Roger Severino. And it speaks for itself. This coming from, oh my goodness gracious me, I'm sorry about the BibSource. You know, they have this thing where you don't have to print the whole, all the page with all the advertisements, but you can just ask for the content. But the content doesn't give the source. This is Roger Severino, August 3rd, this week ago. "Don't hate me," in quotes, the piece starts. "According to a lawsuit filed by the Department of Justice last year, that is what an abortionist at the University of Vermont Medical Center said to a nurse before she forced her to assist in the termination of a child's life on pain of losing her job and potentially her license if she refused. The nurse in the case had informed her bosses well beforehand that she could not participate in abortion because of her religious and moral convictions." And by the way, you notice I just mentioned that, frankly, it shouldn't matter whether she has religious convictions. It should only matter if she has personal moral convictions. That's all that's necessary. You don't have to make this a religious issue. Abortion kills a human being, period. End of issue. Plainly, it's the point. It's the purpose. It's why people get these procedures. It's an unborn human growing and growing and growing and causing a problem. And the only solution is to kill that growing human being. That someone might have scruples about doing that, why is that considered unusual? In any event, she had informed her boss, and I continue with the piece, her right to such a demurrer, a refusal, is protected by federal law, known as the Church Amendments, which Congress passed unanimously in direct response to Roe versus Wade. The facts were stunning in their clarity. The victim was extremely credible and sympathetic, and the violator remained entirely callous and unrepentant. The UVMMC, that would be the University of Vermont Medical Center, Matter was the most open and shut conscience case in over a decade. I say was because Friday, the DOJ, that would be Department of Justice, that means the people who have the power to prosecute or not, the DOJ quietly and voluntarily dismissed the case. No admission of guilt. I mean, this is the case that the nurse brought against the UVMMC. You violated the law, not just my rights in some general sense in how you interpret the First Amendment. It's the explicit law on the books unanimously passed by Congress. Dismissed. No admission of guilt, no injunction, no corrective action, no settlement, no nothing. Worse yet, because the victim has few to no options to sue on her own, and that's due to nuances around private rights of action, the current administration is effectively giving the UVMMC a full pardon and will continue to give it federal funds, despite it having been found by HHS, House and Human Services, to have violated Health and Human Services, rather, to have violated the law. They violated the law egregiously. No matter, no big, whatever. No, you just keep going. Don't hate me indeed, the text says. After Roe v. Wade, the medical profession split in a way that Harry Blackmun, the author of Roe, did not expect. He imagined that women would obtain abortions with the guidance of her physician in respected hospitals and medical practices all over the country, excepting those run by religious institutions. Instead, the medical profession, rightly fearing for its reputation, offloaded abortion work to the legions of abortion clinics that began to spring up like McDonald's, but without the smile. All across the country. To the average American today, there are doctors and there are abortionists, and overwhelmingly medical professionals do not want to be identified with the latter. And they go on to say every year thousands of medical professionals quietly decline to train in or assist or perform or refer to abortions for a simple reason. They enter the practice of medicine to save lives, not to end them. After all, who wants to put on their resume that they abort products of conception all day long for a living, okay? And this explains in part why big abortion is desperate to eliminate conscience protections for medical professionals that have been in place for decades, because it helps their bottom line to have more people complicit in this sordid business. And, of course, the present administration, they go on to say in this article, is cooperating with the abortion industry in that regard, regardless of what the law says. Though, the article continues, the nurse victim here of UVMC's malfeasance was deeply traumatized. She mustered the courage to file a complaint with the Office for Civil Rights at HHS, which is responsible for enforcing our nation's many conscience protection laws. Now, this writer here, I mentioned Roger Severino, says, I was director of the OCR at the time and ordered an investigation by the office's Conscience and Religious Freedom Division, which was founded precisely to handle cases such as these. The division's career professionals, with assistance from career attorneys at the Office of General Counsel, issued findings of violation against the hospital, which led directly to a lawsuit by the DOJ to enforce compliance with the law. In other words, they realized their job. Here's this woman who is abused in her rights, and she brings it for the proper authorities, which sees this as a legitimate case of violation and does what they are told to do, fulfills their obligations to present a case to protect in response to this woman's violated rights. This is their job. And he said, we did it. For those unaware, Becerra, who I guess is, let's see, he is the Secretary of Health and Human Services, all right, under the current administration. Becerra may be the most notorious violator of conscience laws of recent years. He even lost a Supreme Court case with his name on it, NIFLA versus Becerra, after he tried to coerce pro-life pregnancy resource centers into violating their consciences by forcing them to refer mothers in search of life-affirming alternatives to free abortion services. Oh, you're pro-life? Oh, well, that's okay, but women who come to you, you've got to recommend the abortions for them. I mean, can you see how bizarre that is? But this is part of the squeeze of the power of people in power. Well, he lost that case. Becerra was twice found in violations of conscience protection laws by HHS's Conscience and Religious Freedom Division, but now he is in charge of the entire agency. The fox is running the hen house. Seeing this looming conflict of interest, lawmakers have rightly questioned Becerra's commitment to conscience enforcements across many hearings. I don't want to read all this stuff against Becerra because he's just one cog in the wheel. The point I'm making here is that he and the administration that he represents has no interest in upholding the law on this issue. Apparently, he said, we will continue to provide protections for the civil constitutional rights of all Americans, including those that involve religion, and so nothing there changes. Well, the writer says here, it was a lie, all of it, because he acted contrary to that, what he said. And Congress, the piece continues, must hold him. Congress. Okay, let me pause for a moment. Think about it. Congress. Who runs Congress? Well, the people who run Congress, they're on his side. So, the writer says, Congress must hold him accountable for it. I cannot understate how unusual it is for the DOJ and the HHS to drop a duly authorized lawsuit after it has been investigated and filed while getting literally nothing in return. The government strenuously avoids doing such things because it calls into question the consistent expectations of the law, reeks of politics, and exposes the government to potential liability for attorney's fees under the Equal Access to Justice Act. The writer is saying, why would a government drop this thing when it exposes them to all of these counteractions for their irresponsible and illegal behavior? Nevertheless, they did it. He continues, without so much as a slap on the wrist, this was a clear favor to the abortion special interests and a spit in the face of not only the victim in the case, but the many medical professionals who have suffered conscience violations through the years and will continue to suffer, but now with little hope of recourse from the government. So there are excesses in the abuse of power, and legislators then pass laws that explicitly are meant to protect people in this circumstance. And when there is an explicit and egregious violation of those laws, the current DOJ will not prosecute. All right. HHS, he closes here, issued formal findings of violation against UVMMC after a thorough investigation. It simply cannot continue to fund a violator of the law that refuses to agree to come into compliance. Becerra should know this principle well because he was the California Attorney General when the HHS disallowed $200 million of Medicaid funds to the state for forcing people to buy abortion insurance contrary to federal conscience protection laws. There he is again. Even the Obama administration entered into a corrective action agreement with a hospital that had forced a nurse to assist in an abortion. We now know, if there was ever any doubt, that the current administration's first loyalty is not to the law, he closes, but to abortion. And abortion. And more abortion. His final words. This ought to cause a cold chill to run up the spine of every person who learns of this. It, irrespective of your own views, the only way anyone is protected by anything regarding their individual rights is because of the rule of law. And when one group in power feels they have the freedom to ignore the rule of law and do whatever their little old heart desires, that's trouble for us all. Because now, you know, administrations change, and if this becomes the way that we can operate, then what happens when the other side is in power, so to speak, and then it is the pro-aborts ox that gets gored? I'll tell you what's going to happen. It's the same thing that they've done before. They're going to scream about their rights and about the Constitution. But when it's the other side's rights that are being ignored, and not just some generalized right, some controversial decision by a Supreme Court in 1973, but when there's an explicit violation of a federal law that was passed unanimously, not that that really matters, as long as it was passed, it's law, that's being ignored, oh, then where's the outcry? Where's the cry for justice? Social justice warriors should be screaming bloody murder. But social justice is not about social justice. It's about a particular ideology that's in favor now. And if it's not their ox being gored, then they don't care who gets gored. And this is just one example of that. Unfortunately, there's a plethora of them in the news nowadays. And, in fact, the next Solid Ground that's coming out, September 1st, God willing, because I was really late with it, but my team's working hard in getting it going, is titled simply The Evening News. And in that piece, I parade before my readers a series of bib-sourced news items. That means I'll tell you where you can find it. You can go and read it for yourself. That are underscoring a point that I have been making for a while through this whole year of Solid Grounds, that there is a creeping totalitarianism that is overtaking our country. And by the way, now that I think about it, this is precisely the way Barry Weiss, lesbian, centrist, former editor on the New York Times and writer for the New York Times, in her resignation letter from the Times, which I include quotes from and a link to the actual letter. You can read the whole thing. Not a conservative, not sharing our religious views, as far as I could tell, but seeing the abuse, says that, you know, when I thought about having children, the thing that occurred to me that I'd worry about was, you know, the war in Iraq or maybe global warming. But she says, that's not what I'm concerned with now. What I'm concerned with is what I see as, and this is her phrase, though I've been using the principle and even the wording for a while now, what I'm concerned with, Barry Weiss writes in her resignation letter, is creeping totalitarianism. Even she sees it. You don't have to be a conservative to see it. Anyway, think about it. Let's go to break. Greg Kokel here for Stand to Reason.
Hey friends, would you like to be encouraged throughout your week with timely, relevant content meant to bolster your knowledge, wisdom, and character? Or maybe you have a desire to be connected with other like-minded Christians from around the world? If so, then you need to follow Stand to Reason on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Not only will you be able to interact with other Stand to Reason followers, but you'll also stay up to date and informed on our latest resources and events. In our current culture, it's important to have something of value to break up your social media feed. So just visit str.org and find the links to all of our social media platforms at the bottom of the homepage.
You can take Stand to Reason with you through our mobile apps, available for free from the App Store or the Google Play Store. The Quick Reference app gives you short, easily accessible courses on our most popular topics like tactics, homosexuality in the Bible, morality, the story of reality, and many more. The Stand to Reason app has all our latest content available at your fingertips. You can listen to our podcasts, check the blog, and access timely and practical resources. They're free, so download the apps today on the App Store or the Google Play Store and start carrying Stand to Reason with you everywhere you go. If you enjoy our apps, you can help other people find them by rating them on the App Store or the Google Play Store.
Well, this music is appropriate because it's a little bit chaotic and it kind of represents my feelings inside about reading what I just read to you. It just, oh man, something crazy is going on. It's all going off inside. And I have to be careful, even though I'm in the media, so to speak, with a radio show like this and talking about these things so that it will help you be informed about these things and help you to know how to think about these things, because I don't just tell you what to think. I give you the rationale behind it. Even so, I have to be careful about what I read because I don't read the newspapers. I don't watch the news. I do not watch the news. Okay? It ruins my day. I don't read newspapers. I don't trust them. What I read is stuff my staff sends me that gives me a chance to read, not watch. Because when you watch, you get images and you get a limited amount of information really quick. Bang, 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 bang. And you have a hard time assessing it. Okay? That's a liability of news programs. And it goes from the sublime to the ridiculous because you hear all this weighty stuff in the news and then they say, and now this. And what's the and now this? That's a signal that they're going to commercial, right? And so it trivializes the news. No, I want to read stuff by thoughtful people who give accurate information about what's been going on. And that's what I just read to you. And you get all the details. You don't get a bunch of rhetoric. There was a little bit of a rhetorical flair in that written piece, but it didn't obscure what's actually going on, which ought to infuriate you. And so I can't read those things. I mean, people, first thing, they get up in the morning, they read the paper. Before they go to bed at night, they watch the news. What an awful combination. Really, think about it. You know, I go to bed at night. I read history, and sometimes I read about Christian biographies. And sometimes I read a spy novel just for fun. When I get up in the morning, the first thing I look at pretty much is the Word. And I talk to God. I'm not trying to show off here. I'm just saying I want my life anchored in things that are true and not thick with deception flying at me in rhetorically compelling ways. I don't want the world to tell me what to think about the world. Anyway. So we don't watch TV either. We have DVDs. We don't watch TV with commercials and all that other stuff, which is a whole other problem. But doing what I can to protect myself and my family. Now, my girls like to watch, you know, videos. Like they go to YouTube and watch things about video people that they like that are funny and whatever, and most of it's probably pretty innocent. But even so, there is this flood of stuff that comes into our life, and the culture is very corrosive. And it's hard for me when I see these things, and you'll get in the September issue of Solid Ground a whole bunch of examples of this, and some of them are subtle. So subtle that you may not even be aware of how you're being discipled by these things. And I give an example with Delta Airlines that you can read for yourself when you get the piece. I guarantee that most people who walk down the skyway for Delta, that's who I fly with, are not aware of how they're being propagandized by the posters that they go by of characteristic patrons of the airlines, or by the selection of movies that they have, but they are, and I explain how that is, because I see this, I'm alert to it. Okay, I'm not patting myself on the back, I'm just saying I've trained myself to see the lies, and then to help you see the lies as well, to protect you. And as I've said a number of times recently, my main concern is not for non-Christians. My main concern is for the church, to protect them from the world and to protect them from the wolves. And the church is thick with wolves. The world out there is already pretty nasty. It's not disguised. It's just right there for you to see. But inside the church, you have a lot of the same nasties, but it's dressed up in spiritual or religious language or baptized by Holy Spirit words or something like that. But it's no less lie just because it's in sheep's garb. They're still wolves. I just have a few more minutes here in the show, and I have something that was a question that was sent to me here that had to do with ambassador. Now, the ambassador talk I give frequently, and being an ambassador is an important part of what we're training other people to do. It's really our core, where we want to have an impact that is incarnational. we don't want to just give info. We want to produce a certain type of person called an ambassador. And as we characterize this, and many of you already know this, ambassadors have three areas of skill, and that would be knowledge, wisdom, and character is the way we put it. You got to know a few things if you're going to be a good ambassador, even in foreign affairs. You have to have a tactical skill to maneuver with wisdom in conversations if you're going to ply your trade, and you also have to have a character that commends the message and doesn't detract from it. Now, as I develop this idea of character in my talks and also on the Standard Reason University, STRU, a course that I teach on this, I mentioned different ways to make our message more palatable and for us to be more amicable in our engagements with people when we disagree. And I mentioned a couple of things that's important to be able to say to other people that can soften the atmosphere in an appropriate fashion. One of the things I tell people to say is, be ready to acknowledge that you could be mistaken about some things, you know, and I don't make it up if you don't think you're mistaken about that. You could be mistaken about some issue at hand, then don't say that, because it's not a rhetorical trick. It is an expression of appropriate epistemic humility. That is, we are humble about the limitations of our own knowledge, and we are aware that we can have a confirmational bias. We can be looking for things to confirm our own view about things and not see the facts for the way they really are if they are contrary to our view. So this is just my attempt of encouraging Christians to be careful and be willing to admit to other people that in some circumstances they might be mistaken about something. Now, this does not mean that you are mistaken or you think you are mistaken. It just means that you're acknowledging that it's possible you could be. And by saying that really softens things a lot, I think. And I think it's an expression of personal integrity. And I know, why would I say that I could be mistaken? Because I have been mistaken. I actually have been. Once or twice. And my wife will tell you, and my kids will tell you, yeah, Greg's been mistaken. Papa's been mistaken, right? Okay, so since I know that I've been mistaken, and I pretty much know that I still am mistaken at the moment on things that I already believe now. Wait, you mean you think you believe things that are wrong? Of course I do. Well, why don't you change those things? Well, because I don't know what it is that I'm wrong on, but I can't be the only guy on the planet who's got everything right. So I'm willing to say to a detractor, well, here's my view. I could be mistaken on this, but here are the reasons why I hold the view that I hold. Now, what could I be mistaken on? Well, just about everything. I mean, there's a couple of things, some things that I can't say that with integrity. I won't even go into them right now, but the point I'm making, though, is that most of the things we believe, it certainly is possible that we could be mistaken on them. And the objection that gets raised to me if I say, well, I could be wrong, is that it seems like it might cast doubt on my conviction, that I'm not communicating with confidence. Nobody has ever accused me of not communicating with confidence, with being equivocal about the points that I'm making, unless I am genuinely equivocal and acknowledge it. Well, it could be this, it could be that. I don't know. I'm kind of going here, but I could be mistaken. Maybe it's this. But even in the things that I have strong justification for, even in those, it's possible I could be mistaken. I want to cling to my convictions with the vigor and intensity that my justification allows for. So there are things I'm going to hang on real tightly to, and I'm not going to let go because I have really, really good justification, reasons for them. And other things, well, you know, I maybe not so strong. I think I'm right, and here are the reasons, but I could be mistaken. Now, I think that when we have this, when we demonstrate a certain kind of epistemic humility, that's a humility about what we think we know, it actually softens the conversation, and I think makes our views more palatable to others. Because we are not coming across with a kind of unmitigated dogmatism. I'm right in everything I believe. You're wrong in every way you disagree with me. It's my way or the highway. I mean, that's not a very persuasive atmosphere to be engaged in. But if we're saying, you know, shrugging our shoulders, well, look, I disagree with that. I think you're mistaken. I could be mistaken myself, but let me give you the reasons why I think I'm on the right track here. Okay? If by the way, and here's another thing, if we don't think we could be mistaken, then we're not going to be alert about possibly being mistaken, which means we're not going to know it when we are mistaken, all right? As I put it in the past, if you have an unshakable belief in something that is false, then you have an unshakable delusion. And there are a whole lot of people who have an unshakable delusion. What's interesting to me is atheists of all people seem to be the kind of people that virtually never think that they could be mistaken. And I suspect most people that I'm talking to right now think atheists are mistaken. I'm convinced that they're mistaken, though I guess there's a sense which I could be wrong, but this is one of the convictions that's among the most strong for me. I cannot will myself to be an atheist because I know too much. And most other things, I could be mistaken, and I think it's good to acknowledge that, even though you have strong convictions and well-justified convictions to the contrary. Just saying, there's a little tactical tip for you. All right, that's it for this show. I'm Greg Kokel for Stand to Reason. Give them heaven, friends. Bye-bye now.